Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 532 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week once again by Chad Smart. And Chad, we're going to talk Royal Rumble, not just the build up to the 2025 Royal Rumble, which is coming up on Saturday, but also looking back historically on the Rumble. But before we get there, how are you doing? How are things going out there? We haven't been on the podcast together in a couple of weeks, even though I feel like we talk almost every day or just about every day via social media, which is going to be a topic for a future podcast. But today we're going to focus on the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, no, things are going good. You know, it's a brisk 45 degrees as we're recording this. So I think you can take your weather back at any point in time because I miss my California 70 degree weather. But no, it's all good. I have nothing really to say other than it's good because it's been a long 2 weeks around here after a quick 24-hour trip to Florida last weekend.
Yeah.
Weekend before we recorded this. And then, just some, work stuff came up over during the week where I screwed something up and caused some havoc. So that's never good and just makes for long days and restless nights. But now we get to talk wrestling, and you know that makes everything better because wrestling is the thing that brings everybody together.
It does, but although I think we're going to be apart on some parts of our conversation today, which is good. I mean, I hear that controversy creates cash, and you know we should be more douchey and be dicks, and people will watch.
Well, no. So I think if we both just say the same thing and agree on everything, that's a boring conversation. So as long as you have honest discussion and don't just, you know, make hot take comments like Cody Rhodes being the Miz 2.0, then everything should be good.
Yeah, you brought him up, so I'm bringing him into the picture here, and we are going to talk about Cody Rhodes. And I guess since you brought him up, we can start kind of talking about him, but also want to get some quick thoughts on Saturday night's main event. You know, we talked last month when the show came back after a decade or two long hiatus. You know, I talked about having, you know, the nostalgia and the feels with that. You didn't watch live. I watched live, and there were some technical difficulties on the NBC feed. I think Peacock was fine. But what were your initial takeaways? Was it as good as the first episode being the first modern day episode? Or, you know, did it still have that nostalgic feel for you? What were your initial thoughts of everything?
It's good. You know, my thoughts are pretty much the same that I kind of had on the first episode from what I remember is that, and that is, you know, they try to do a nostalgia feeling with it, but the one thing that made Saturday Night's Main Event kind of what Saturday Night's Main Event was, is the thing that they're not doing. And that's the little promos before the show starts. Mm-hmm. It's the, you know, the logo for each wrestler in the, you know, the title screen or the promotional screens. And that's what I'm missing from the show, because otherwise it's just another WWE show. The only difference is they start with Joe and Jesse talking about the show, you know, which is something I don't really, I get it. It's for possibly for people who are tuning in, who don't follow WWE, and so you're trying to tell them what's coming up, but I would rather have the quick little promos at the start of the show to do that.
Well, this is going to be the boring part where we agree. I 100% agree, because I did notice, And in December, it was kind of a crazy night. I think I explained back on the podcast. I had come in. We had been out during the day, and I actually worked yesterday or on Saturday as well. So I got home, though, in plenty of time. I watched Wheel of Fortune, and then that went right into Saturday night's main event. So for me, I agree. I was waiting. I was like, okay, this time they're going to start off hot with the promos. And they didn't. And it was to me, it looked like the start of a Raw where you've got the drone shot kind of coming into the arena there in San Antonio. And so from that perspective, I was disappointed. But I will say they more than made up for it with the nostalgia feel, at least for me, when they had the legends this time around, I think, and no disrespect to Tito Santana or Greg Valentine or Coco Beware from the December show, but you know, you had Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, all in the crowd there, and man, it was like boom, that nostalgia feel. And I know it's probably to younger fans that maybe don't get it. It sounds cheesy, but I mean, there were many a night that we sat and watched, or Sunday mornings, and those that was our entertainment. You know, I have a case full of their figures sitting behind me right now. So it was good to see that for me at least. And I felt the nostalgia bringing Jesse back. I nitpick about Jesse Ventura's commentary. I feel like, and I don't know if they discuss things, because I do feel like I've noticed with commentary since Vince McMahon's gone, and it's not the obvious production or producing of the talent doing the commentary right there in their ears like it was before with Vince. But I felt like Jesse went rogue a couple of times during his commentary, and I don't know if he knew how things were going or whatnot, but it felt like he was a little too much of a Sheamus cheerleader, and said, you know, that he should have won. That was a three count. And when they did the replay, the referee did not count three. So I don't know if that's part of the shtick or if Jesse was legitimately, he kind of almost sounded like you and I yelling at Cloud sometimes during the podcast.
You know, I wasn't fully watching the show when I did watch. I was more listening, and when Jesse started talking about, you know, the referee made the three count, the match should be over, I'm like, yes, that's what I've been saying for 38 years. That's why Andre the Giant won at WrestleMania 3, because the ref made a three count. Should have pushed the Orange Goblin off to the side, and Andre should have been champion. So I did appreciate that aspect of Jesse's commentary, where it felt like the old Jesse Ventura from the 80s. You bring up the legends, though. I would go back to that real quick. Yeah. I must have missed Arn and Tully, because I kind of tried to fast forward through the promo, you know, like Shop Zone and WrestleMania stuff. Yeah. And so I did see DiBiase and Hacksaw. And I guess must have just skipped Arn and Tully. But, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier about the little vignettes at the beginning, one of the other things that made Saturday Night's main event was the little skits and sketches. You know, I would rather see, if they're going to bring in the legends, let's see them interact with the new generation backstage, you know, do something instead of just being in the crowd, being like, hey, look, I'm sitting ringside for this match, and now I'm going to go backstage as soon as the camera's off of me, because that's what they do. I've, you know, been at live shows where I've seen them cycle people in and out. Famously WrestleMania 22, when Michelle Williams was sitting in front of us. I think that's her name from Destiny's Child. That's not Beyonce or Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. I work with a Michelle Williams. So for a second, I'm like, how did you know her? No.
Do you ever go up to her and go like, I don't want to wait for our lives to be over.
Well, and I think that they did some production stuff with those talents as well, because Hacksaw posted some pictures on his social media. And again, we're going to do a social media topic very soon, but he was mic'd up, and they had all the lights on, and it looked like he was sitting down doing an interview, which, you know, it's great to get, I think getting those talents together and doing things while they're still here and able to do those things, I think is always a good thing, and hearing those stories. And again, I don't know what they're going to do with it or who or what they all talk to, but yeah, they definitely, you know, To me, seeing Arn and Tully on was interesting because of their pre oh, Mark Henry was also. Did you see Mark
Oh,
Henry?
yeah.
That
I
was
did see
big
Mark Henry.
because thinking of AEW. So, because I it's my understanding that none of those guys, I know Tully hasn't been for quite some time, but are Arn and Mark Henry finished with AEW? Do you know? Or okay. Because I didn't know if that mattered because they were just doing a quick little appearance or if that it's going to lead into something else. But I also think, and now I'm kind of going on a side tangent here. We saw Tully on Saturday Night's Main Event. We saw Arn. They both have children now that are in the business. Tessa Blanchard more famously probably and more successful than Brock Anderson. But Tessa Blanchard just won the TNA Knockout Championship from Jordynne Grace a week or so ago.
No,
It's Royal Rumble season. What?
I think she fought Jordynne Grace, but Masa Slamovich, if I'm saying that correctly, I believe is the women's knockouts champion.
Oh, okay. I thought Tessa won the championship. I know she beat
No,
her.
I think from the crowd reaction, she won the Hulk Hogan title, but
What's the Hulk Hogan title?
the crowd was chanting, "She's a racist."
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I
which I was
thought
also going to
that.
say, none of the legends got booed this time, so that's a good step up from the first Raw on Netflix.
Okay,
But
my bad. I thought that she won the women's championship.
yeah, I believe because
Well,
I did watch Impact this past week because they were live for the first time in 8 years, and Cora Jade from NXT came out and distracted Slamovich during a six woman tag. I'm going to guess they're going to set up some type of program between those two. And so maybe she'll show up, Slamovich will show up at the Rumble this year. I would also expect Jordynne Grace to show up, but we can discuss that later.
And that was kind of where I was heading with Tessa. Do you think we get a Charlotte Flair, Tessa Blanchard? People have been talking about that match for a long time. This partnership, this affiliate with TNA has become more publicly talked about, I guess. They announced it, what, a week or so ago that they've signed a years long deal that they're going to be doing talent swaps and whatnot. Do you think we'll see Tessa Blanchard and Charlotte Flair one day?
Now that Tessa is black, is black. Whoa, Freudian slip. Now that Tessa is back wrestling in North America, or in America, I should say, because I think she'd been wrestling in Mexico, which technically is part of North America.
For now.
For now, I mean, we'll see. That's why we can have the Gulf of America, because it's all North America. But I wouldn't be surprised to see it. And it'd be interesting to see what they do and if they play into the history. I mean, it's weird because her last name is Blanchard, but she was raised by Magnum TA. And so I think she refers to Magnum more as her dad than Tully. So, I don't know, but will we see Tully back on? Well, I mean, I guess he was on Saturday Night's Main Event, but will we see Tully in more of a non-special appearance role?
Because he, I mean, I think, didn't he wrestle not that long ago in AEW? Didn't they do like a six-man tag or something where he
I
hit
don't
the
remember
slingshot on
him.
somebody?
Maybe I don't remember if he. I mean, that sounds plausible. I know he was managing for a while, and then not. They didn't really use him as well as they should have. Same with Double A, but I
It'll
don't know.
be interesting to see, and maybe down the road we do a future episode again, kind of revisiting the
And can they
second, third
put?
generation superstars.
I know Brock Anderson is wrestling for MLW right now, but could they bring him in? Put him in a dress and call him Brooke Anderson. And I don't know if, I don't think Barry's got any kids. Or,
Oh yeah. I guess you're going with the horseman route of kids, specifically daughters. It is going to be interesting to see because really, and I'm just going off the top of my head, Charlotte and Tessa are the only two second generation female. I mean, I guess Luna Vachon years ago was, but
Yeah, and I mean, I think she just signed with AEW as well, but there is Rachel Ellering,
oh yeah.
which is fellow, and she was in the Mae Young Classic several years back, but I don't think she's reached the level of, obviously not Charlotte, but as Tessa as well. I think she's, I think she's mainly on Ring of Honor at the
I guess
moment.
there's Miranda Gordy too, as I'm sitting here
Yeah,
thinking.
and I
So,
think, I don't know if she's still with NWA or not.
and then Ava Raine.
Who?
I don't know that she's gonna wrestle, but
I mean, she was wrestling. Yeah, it's weird because she was wrestling, and then they moved her into the GM of NXT. And I don't remember ever watching her actually wrestle, so I don't know if it was a move out of, hey, let's keep you on TV, but
yeah.
you're not, you're more David than Charlotte. Let's
Yeah.
say, put it that way.
Well, and as we're talking here and leading up to the Royal Rumble, Saturday night's main event was obviously not the final show that we're going to see before the Rumble, but it was the go home
Yeah,
Saturday night's main event.
I have a quick question for you about Saturday Night's Main Event. And I could have looked this up, but I didn't really. I wanted to test your knowledge. That's it. That's it. I wasn't being lazy. Because I saw people, some comments online before Saturday Night's Main Event saying, if nothing happens, will people stop treating Saturday Night's Main Event as a special presentation? It will be just another show. Does something need to happen? And I was trying to think, and I know they mentioned Sean beating the British Bulldog for the IC title on an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. And I want to say the tag titles may have changed on an episode, but off the top of your head, how many times do you recall titles changing on the main event?
I think Saturday night's main event, I think that was it. I think it was the Brainbusters beating Demolition in July of '89 for the tag team titles. Sean beat the Bulldog, and that was when Saturday night's main event, I think, had moved to Fox, so it was on in prime time. But beyond that, I mean, if I still say Paul Orndorff's feet touched first in the cage
Of
match,
course.
so technically, he should have won, but then if you go main event, Hogan and Andre, that wasn't
Yeah.
Saturday night's main event, but that was a
Right.
main event banner show.
And I mean, and that was a Mania setup show, so
Right. I
I guess for
don't recall
the
though. See, and here's the thing: I could sit here and tell. I just told you that it was
angle.
July of '89 when the Brainbusters won. I
Yeah.
don't have any recollection other than I think we talked about it the last time, the JBL Stone Cold Steve Austin beer bash thing from the more recent Saturday
From the
night's main
ten
event. I couldn't
2010s,
tell
yeah.
you anything that happened on any of those other shows. So there may have been title changes there. I don't remember. I don't think there were.
Okay. But I mean, I guess my point that I was saying is like title changes don't really happen on Saturday Night's Main Event. So, the Gunther Jey Uso match last night did have some good false finishes, but I don't think anyone rightfully was expecting any of the titles to change. I mean, that could be a whole nother topic about expectations on shows versus the reality of what they are. So.
Well, I thought that, of the three title matches that there were, I thought maybe Sheamus had the best shot just because they kept building up of he has not won the Intercontinental Championship. I'm glad they didn't change any of the titles. Let me get your take too, though, on, and I know you said you listened more than you watched, but I felt like that Sheamus, not Sheamus, the Jey Uso Gunther match ended kind of abruptly. And there's a spot where Jey goes down and the referee kind of gets down and says, and I don't know if he's telling him to go home or what, but it's pretty quick after that that Gunther does the powerbomb thing and then pins him. So it felt like, I don't know if they were going, because I was watching the clock and I'm like, it's getting close. And because with NBC, I think they're probably on a,
Tight cut off, yeah.
Netflix, there's no limit now. And then on USA, they usually got some freedom to go into the overrun. But yeah, you're in prime time, you're on network television, and I don't think SmackDown ever bled over into the other stuff either, even though they were going to a pre-recorded Saturday Night Live. So, but yeah, they were very tight on the out, I thought, and I didn't really see any chatter about it on social media afterward, but to me it just felt kind of rushed and like, okay, hey, we got to get this over with, because yeah, they had done some really spectacular moves and like you said, the false finishes, and then all of a sudden a power bomb and it's over. So it
And
felt
like I
rushed.
said, okay, yeah, and I watched it after the fact on Peacock, so I didn't know what the
Oh,
timing was for the
yeah.
show, so I wouldn't have noticed anything. But because I mean, after the Peacock, after that match, then they started playing some like promos, which I think was what they've done after last month's Saturday Night's Main Event 2, and I think maybe some other stuff that's gone up on Peacock where it's just random profiles of wrestlers, which maybe they just do to pad time or just whatever. But yeah.
Well, that December show closed with Kevin Owens versus Cody Rhodes for the championship. Cody, I'm bringing him back in here because we're going to talk about Cody and Kevin specifically, because this is leading up to the Royal Rumble for this year. I'm going to go on a limb and say that the buildup for this feud between Cody and Kevin Owens is something we needed months ago with Cody. I feel like, on one hand, you and I are going to agree. I still feel like Cody is kind of living in Roman's shadow. They have not really let him shine as champion. But I think that we finally have a legitimate feud with Kevin Owens. I love the fact that they have made him this throwback, not only with the Winged Eagle belt, but also wearing the t-shirts. You know, last night or on Saturday night, he's wearing a Cody Sucks Egg shirt, a tribute to Terry Funk. Dory Funk Jr., by the way, was also in the crowd at the Main Event, or Saturday night's Main Event. So I like how they have done that. It feels like to me, Kevin Owens, even when he's a face, has always kind of been a dick. And I like that about his character. And I feel
He's French
like
Canadian.
that may have something to do with it. I just love the sarcasm, the snarkiness, the I don't know. To me, it feels like it's something that we needed a long time ago for Cody, because I do think it has made Cody's championship run feel different now all of a sudden. Whereas before, it was just like, we really don't have anyone for him. We're going to have him do this, this, or this. At least from my perspective, it feels like Cody's actually doing something a bit more meaningful.
Yeah, and it also it's a storyline that makes sense, you know,
Sure.
after everything with the bloodline over the last few years, and then for Cody just to team up with Roman and be like, oh yeah, we're good, you know. I mean, you know, if in Kevin's eyes, you know, he's taken a beating from the bloodline multiple times and he's, you know, stood up for Cody just to have Cody turn around, you would be like, hey, what's going on? You know, why? And you know, and that's one of the things that we've talked about many times over the years with wrestling is like whenever someone turns face or heel, then all of a sudden the past is forgotten. And it's like, oh, well, now we're, you know, we're teaming up, even though we just beat the hell out of each other 6 months ago, but now we're on the same side. And it's like that again, going back to my Chikara fandom days, you know, one of the best things that really got me into it was when they had a turn and Eric Cannon was like, didn't you see I was helping you? And Mike Quackenbush like, yeah, I have a memory that goes back longer than 5 minutes. You know, for the past year, you've been a dick. I'm not helping you. And then he couldn't get anybody else to team up with him, you know, at the next tag Grand Prix. So this, like you said, makes sense for Kevin Owens. It actually, I think, you know, people online have also said this, like Kevin is should be the face in this feud. But you know, and I do appreciate Kevin's t-shirts, the Cody Sucks Eggs, the son of the Canadian Dream, son of a security technician or whatever.
I love it.
But it's also, you know, one of my biggest complaints with Cody Rhodes' title run is that all of his feuds somehow involve Dusty Rhodes. And it's like at some point, Cody's got to stand on being Cody Rhodes, not just being the son of a plumber. So.
Well, let's talk more about that, because we both agree that tying Dusty in with Kevin Owens has worked. And, you know, you mentioned it's always been, I don't know why I just said that like I'm Canadian. It's always been interesting to me a lot of times, and I've noticed it more as an adult, obviously, but when they're trying to play somebody off as the heel and they're standing on a premise that really should make them the face, you know, Kevin Owens being the recent example, because Kevin Owens is not wrong. You know, maybe he's been a little dastardly in his way of going about it, but back in the day, and I say back in the day, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, when CM Punk was feuding with Jeff Hardy and talking about straight edge and the abusive nature that Jeff Hardy was doing to himself, Punk wasn't wrong, but it's all in the presentation, you know. Jesse Ventura pointing out Hulk Hogan's eye rakes and back scratches and kind of the cheating things that he did. Bobby Heenan talked about it. You know, those guys weren't wrong, but for whatever reason, they were always presented as being the bad guy, if you will. So I find that interesting with this Kevin Owens and Cody feud that's going on right now as well. But talk to me more about your comment about Cody being Miz 2.0. What does that mean?
That means that Cody is a great face for the company in terms of doing promotional work. And, you know, he's kind of, I say, you know, the Miz was that way too. And I, you know, it's also kind of a John Cena factor of you can put him out there, you know, he's not going to embarrass the company. He's going to do good. But when the bell rings, you know, and the 2 years that he's been in WWE, you know, coming back from AEW and in the Indies, what has he done that has been memorable? That, you know, he had the three matches with Seth Rollins, which the most memorable thing was him wrestling in the Hell in a Cell with the torn pec. And then since being champion, you know, him beating Roman was a historical moment, but I would say that's more historical for Roman losing than Cody winning, especially with all the interference and all the shenanigans that went on during that match. It wasn't like Cody just came in and beat Roman. And then, as you know, we kind of alluded to in the lead up to this, what has Cody done in his championship reign that has been memorable? He's had good matches, but you know, we can look back at, you know, 88, 89 and tell you what happened during that time frame. And, you know, the feuds that Hulk Hogan had or Randy Savage. But in 5 years, what are you going to think about Cody's reign right now? What is going to be this thing that stands out to you outside of right now this Kevin Owens feud?
And, you know, I'm going to bring up 88, 89, because that is the era of the Macho Man. I'm actually wearing my Macho Man. You can't really see it, but I'm wearing my Macho Man t-shirt today. I see these as almost being parallel with each other, because I think Cody suffers from, I don't know if it's Cody suffering from Macho Man syndrome or if it's suffering from Hulk Hogan syndrome, but they pass the torch to the next guy in line, but they're not really done with the guy who was carrying the torch. You know, Hogan, even though he left for a little bit, went and did his movie, he comes back and he's still kind of billed as the top dog, even though Macho Man is the champion. And I feel like that's still kind of going on with Cody. You know, Cody, like you said, though, is making the appearances. He's, you know, he's a good company spokesman. He toes company line. He's out on the talk show circuit. He's doing Make-A-Wish. The kids love him. And I think that's all fine and good. But like you said, what memorable things, other than winning the championship at WrestleMania 4, what stands out to you about the Macho Man's WWF championship one? Other than the mega powers explode, it all still kind of focused and centered around Hulk Hogan. So I feel like at this point, it's the same thing, just different players in those positions.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's the Poochie effect. Whenever Poochie's not on screen, you have to ask, where's Poochie?
Yeah.
And that was the case with Hogan, because even, like you said, even though he wasn't there, it was still like, when is he coming back? You know, Cody beats Roman, the big question is, when is Roman coming back? And, you know, as I've said on the show before, and talking about face heel dynamics, why is Roman a face right now? It's just because he was gone and now he's come back. He hasn't changed, but the fans' perception of him has changed for some reason, which but it's still that when is Roman coming back aspect, you know? And he came back at Raw Netflix premiere, beat Solo to become the tribal chief again. And then what, you know? It's still, but you have Cody and Kevin Owens right now, and Roman will be back at the Rumble. You know, do they have Roman win and then we get Cody Roman 3 at Mania? I hope not. But yeah, I think until, you know, and I mean, it even kind of goes with Gunther the same way too. You know, Gunther was this unstoppable force and he won the title at SummerSlam, but what have they done with him since it? You know, is he the focus on Monday Night Raw? It's debatable, considering that he didn't even, you know, on the premiere episode, he was in a promo package. He wasn't even on the show.
Yeah, and you know, some of the commonality are the, you know, we're getting back into that era of lengthy title runs. Is that hurting it? Because we're so conditioned that, you know, it's not uncommon in a 1 year period for there to be two or three, or, you know, I think in 99, I don't have it in front of me, but there were probably multiple, 17, maybe double digit championship title changes for just the heavyweight championship. And so, you know, we went from Hogan holding it for 4 years, and then holding it through most of, you know, from 84 through 90, for essentially it was Hogan was, you know, the go-to guy as champion. And then in the mid 2000s, or, you know, the John Cena era, still dropping it every once in a while, but then, you know, we had what, almost 4 years or 3 years of Roman being champion. You know, I don't see Cody holding it onto it for that long, but have we as fans been, you know, and we're obviously not in the demographic anymore, but do fans expect that title change? You know, how does a babyface Roman versus babyface Cody look at WrestleMania? Do we need that? We've had, like you said, two incarnations of this match at the previous two WrestleManias. I don't want to see it again, but I don't know if the fans want to see it again. And then what happens at the Royal Rumble? I assume Cody's going to retain and defend at WrestleMania, but who should win the Royal Rumble? You know, we've got Punk, Roman, John Cena. You know, those are the three big contenders, but I don't know who else is officially entered into it, but you've got a lot of legitimate, you know, I tweeted about it being the most stacked Rumble, and you said something about 97, and then I said, well, I didn't think Midian, or I don't know who else was in that Rumble, had any shot of winning it, but I feel like there are a lot of, there is a lot of ambiguity to who is going to win, which I think is a good thing. I don't know who's going to win, and on the women's side, I have no clue who to even guess for that one. So I like this kind of feeling of, because there have been years where, I think last year we all expected it to be either Cody or Punk, and they were the last two guys in there. So I'm excited for the Rumble. I always am. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be watching it live. So I will hopefully watch it either later that night or on Sunday morning. But I feel like that those question marks in the air right now is a good thing, but and now that Elimination Chamber still is a factor too, that could change the outcomes, or you know, it kind of throws that monkey wrench and makes it a little less predictable as well.
Well, you know, real quick for the women's, I think your two odds on favorite would probably be Charlotte Flair, since she's returning, or Nikki Bella, because hopefully she'll be coming back and, you know, reclaim her spot at the top of the Divas Mountain.
If Nikki Bella, my nightmare would be the final two would be Nikki Bella and
Nia Jax.
Nia Jax. I would turn off the damn show.
I was gonna say, have you been watching Traitors on Peacock? I guess
what
she's
is it
on
called?
This Traitors. It's a reality show, competition show. Apparently, Nikki's on this season.
Oh, but, yeah.
No, you know, and I think to tie a lot of thoughts in together, you know, one, talking about the lengthy title reigns, you know, we're back in 88, 89. As we said, you didn't see the champion wrestling on a monthly basis or on a weekly basis even, or even being on TV, you know, on the syndicated shows. And so that has changed, which I think that aspect that came in through the Attitude Era is why we have more title changes now, because you're having more main event matches on weekly television instead of just the squash matches. But I also think that that's hurt the winner of the Rumble getting the WrestleMania shot. You know, when they started it, you didn't have anything between Rumble and Mania. And so it was something to build up to. But now that you have 6-7 weeks between the Rumble and Mania, and you have a pay-per-view in between, it, you know, is it passé to have the winner of the Rumble get the title match at Mania? Why not give him the title match at the next, you know, at Elimination Chamber? And also, you know, it, if you're not going to have a star-studded field of entrants in the Rumble, again, it takes away that, you know, the expectation of who can win. You know, I remember, you know, when Alberto Del Rio won and it came down to him and Santino Marella, no one really thought Santino was going to win, although the crowd wanted it and they made it feel like he could. No one expected Santino to go to, you know, to Mania to challenge because of his position in the card. So in this, that same way, yeah, you figure that I would bet right now that the final four will come down to Roman, Cena, Punk, and maybe Drew, unless they throw someone as a surprise in there, or they want to just mess with things. But, you know, for me personally, the one that, you know, the storyline that I would go with that I would want to see at Mania is Kevin wins, beats Cody, and then Sami Zayn wins the Rumble. And so you set up that match. Or, and I know this is like the Vegas long shot of winning, have Xavier Woods win and then go on to Mania and become champion and build up that New Day heel turn, which is kind of falling flat right now because they haven't really done anything since, you know, they kicked Big E out and turned on him. But yeah, I mean, you know, I would say odds on, I'm going with CM Punk to win. And I'm going with anybody but John Cena, and I'll be fine with it, unless it's Goldberg.
Well, and that's another fact to throw in there too, because there had been speculation that Goldberg is going to have his last match in 2025 in WWE. And, you know, I think he specifically mentioned Gunther on the game day event that he was at when he kind of announced his last match was coming. So Gunther is the WWE champion, but I don't think they've officially said when Goldberg's last
match.
No,
I think they said it won't be at Mania.
It won't be. Okay.
Yeah. But again, do we need a Goldberg final match? No. Let him
What's
go.
That?
Let him go. I said, do we need a Goldberg final match? I don't think so. And if we do, have him go wrestle Ric Flair in a bingo hall somewhere and keep it off TV.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I like your Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn thing, but to me that feels a bit too indie-rific for what WWE would be willing to do.
Yeah.
Even though I feel like Sami Zayn has proven himself. And I do think Sami Zayn is a modern day Mick Foley. Just looking, you know, like looking at him and just kind of his passion. And I've also read speculation that Sami turns on Cody at the Rumble and helps Kevin win the championship. I don't, it just, to me, it feels too, and even though Kevin's been there for a long time. And like I said, again, it kind of feels like that Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage syndrome, where even if Kevin, you know, when he had the championship way back when, he still felt less than to me, because and not because of him, but just the way he was presented. I don't know if could they put him into the main event of WrestleMania 41, where it feels like he is the main event. Because right now, like with Gunther, even though he's got this impressive record, I think 70% of his career in WWE has been a champion, they said on Saturday Night. I don't feel it with him. And I think it's, again, part of that presentation. I know that there are some people that love Luther, but I personally don't feel it. But you mentioned Punk. You think Punk's going to win. Is this all payback? Do you think if he wins, is it all, and I say payback in a positive way, not like revenge payback, but like showing some gratitude and love for him for why he left 10 plus years ago, because he hadn't had that main event at WrestleMania?
And this was purely speculation. I think part of him coming back was an offer to main event WrestleMania. Just because, again, that's the one thing that he said he's all he wanted and should have had at some point during his run. But, you know, making the deal with Paul Heyman, you know, will that play into effect? And I don't know. Or do they just do Punk Roman as the battle of the Heyman guys? And which corner will Heyman be in? And, you know, he could be the Miss Elizabeth to the Punk's Hogan and Roman Savage. Can we get Paul Heyman in a shark cage?
There you go. you were saying something in jog. Oh, so I think we've talked offline. I don't think we ever talked about it on the podcast. There was some speculation on Busted Open Radio. Dave LaGreca, I believe, is the one who said it, that the Raw on Netflix, the debut episode, is the biggest thing to happen for WWE, like on a presentation stage. You know, not WrestleMania 3, not WrestleMania last year where it set all these records. You know, none of those other events, not the first WrestleMania. He thinks that Raw on Netflix, just because of the sheer volume of people that watched and how the opportunities and things that it creates. I mean, I think it was big and it was significant, but I don't think it was the end-all be-all. But his speculation was, you know, Punk closed that show. Was that a way to placate this itch for WrestleMania? I still think that, you know, the brand of WrestleMania 40 years later is still the end-all be-all. I think there are probably many, many fans who would love to go. But I think that there are many, many wrestlers, even the ones that are bashing WWE on social media, that would give their right arm for a chance to even be a part of WrestleMania. So I think that the value still is in the WrestleMania name and being part of that. And even though Punk was Punk ever champion at WrestleMania, or was he always just on the card? I know he wrestled Undertaker. The year he wrestled Jericho, was he defending a belt there? I don't recall.
Maybe. But,
so, you know, and I guess that also goes into the, what is your definition of main event? Because they, for years, have been selling WrestleMania as having co-main events, multiple main events. And now that it's two nights, that's obviously a better argument. But, you know, if you close the show on Saturday night, are you any less of a main event than the show that closes on Sunday? You know, would they have ended... You know, obviously for storytelling purposes, it made more sense to close out WrestleMania 40 with Rock and Roman teaming up against Cody and Seth to then lead into Seth and or Roman and Cody the next night. The first of the year that we went at 39, I feel like it was the same way. I don't really remember. I guess 1 year it was the women closed out Saturday night. Bianca and Sasha closed out one night. And it's Brock and Roman. So I don't know. What do you, as a fan, what do you perceive as main event? Can a show have more than one main event? And that goes not just for WWE, but AEW, TNA, you know, all these other companies out there that are putting shows.
Yeah. Well, First, I have to get in my quip that I think Zach Allen gave his right leg to be on WrestleMania, and that didn't work out. That's too bad. No, I don't think multiple main events is a proper. I think multiple marquee matches is a better wording for it. I think your main event is your final match. That is your, you know, the match of the night. That's the one. Although, you know, then you can get technical and say, well, you know, on the house show circuit back in the day, the main event went on before intermission so that guys could get out of the arena and go to another show, or they didn't have to stay late and, you know, get, you know, if the crowd wanted to leave early, they could. So, but I think most people's definition would be the final match is your main event, because like you said, that's what you're building up to. That's that should be probably your most emotionally driven match of the night. So that's how I feel. But again, you could have marquee match. You can say, and I think, you know, this year's WrestleMania will probably have several marquee, or should have several marquee matchups. But what is your, what, when you, after the show is over, what is going to be your big takeaway? And that should be your main event.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think the Saturday night's main event back in the day, you know, when it came on at 10:30 Central Time here in the Midwest, you know, they obviously front loaded it, because I'm not going to, you know, little kids weren't going to stay up until midnight to see Hulk Hogan wrestle. And that's when you got, you know, Coco Beware versus Greg the Hangman Valentine, or, you know, one of those kinds of matches. So, and again, not disparaging any of them, but this was in an era where, like you said earlier, we didn't get Hogan wrestling weekly on the syndicated show. We didn't see him all the time. So on that Saturday night when he was wrestling Nikolai Volkov or Bob Orton or King Kong, but you knew he was going to win, but you were also getting a chance to see him outside of having to pay for it at a pay-per-view. So, or the very rare sweeps month where Hogan may wrestle or superstar or whatever. But I think that, you know, the Royal Rumble has obviously, this is a good thing, more questions than answers at this point, at least. And I know we've got Raw and SmackDown still, and I guess NXT as well. Do you think, you know, with the Rumble over the last couple of decades, probably we've thrown in surprise entrants. And a lot of times those surprises were legends. You know, we had Piper and Snuka 1 year at MSG that came in. We've seen Big Daddy Cool Diesel come back, the Godfather, you know, those guys that, you know, aren't going to win, but they're taking up a spot. You get the nostalgia pop. I've never really had a problem with it, but in 2025, the roster is so loaded with talent and whatnot. And I don't feel like, and I'm trying to remember last year in 2024, I don't remember there being like a quote unquote legend coming in as the surprise. The surprise is more maybe of the superstars returning from injury or you know, somebody that's going to be there the next week and maybe have a viable shot. So where do you sit on surprises in the Rumble? Are they necessary now that, you know, because back in the day too, you know, look back at the 93 Rumble, the talent pool was very, very shallow. So you had Carlos Colon, you had some of the fast wrestlers from Mexico, and people that you weren't necessarily going to expect to see in the WWF.
I don't think the surprise entrants are, like you said, they're good for the nostalgia pop. I think it depends on how many you have. So I think 1 year there were like three or four. Yeah. I think that was when they had like Henning and maybe Diesel and some other guys. So I think if you limit it and space it out properly, I have no problem with it. And I think I read somewhere where there are rumors that and this may be a spoiler alert, so cover your ears if you don't want to hear it, but it's going to make the conversation really bad if you don't hear what I say, so you can respond. But I think Hacksaw Jim Duggan is rumored to be a surprise entrance, because that would give him wrestling in a Royal Rumble match in five different decades. So that, you know, and which I think Shawn Michaels, maybe Shawn's only done four as well. I can't remember when he retired, but you know, I can see if you do that just for a, you know, to keep a streak going. I don't expect Duggan to win if he's in it, but you know, and I, again, it also comes down to their placement in the show, in the card, or in the Rumble itself. Are you going to have them come in and be in like the last four or five names and have them be there at the end, or put them in early, get the pop, they get eliminated, you move on with the story. So, you know, yes, I think this year there is more than enough talent on in WWE to not have to have a lot of nostalgia pop appearances. But again, you know, trying to think about it, you know, we've mentioned four or five top guys. Beyond that, who do you see as a legitimate chance to win? Because, you know, you could throw Sheamus in there, you can throw Braun Breaker. My mind is going blank on other guys, you know, the rest of the Bloodline, which are big names. But, and I guess this is the point too, what storyline are you going to tell going into Mania with the winner?
Yeah, and, you know, it kind of goes back to what you said earlier about the stipulation of a shot at the championship, because inadvertently, you know, the Royal Rumble, even though they never put the stipulation on it, and this is where I'm going to put on my nerd hat here and kind of talk about this part of it, you know, technically speaking, well, not technically speaking, every Royal Rumble wins has gone on to wrestle for a championship at WrestleMania, except for Big John Studd and Vince McMahon. And here's where I'm going to argue. Not argue, but here's where I'm going to try to make my point. 88, Hacksaw wins the Royal Rumble and then is entered into the tournament for the championship. So technically, he had a title shot at that WrestleMania. 89, Big John Studd wins. He just goes to WrestleMania 5 to referee Jake the Snake versus Andre the Giant. So probably one of the bigger Royal Rumble winners, unexpected, because back then in 89, I did not think that John Studd would win. 1990, Hulk Hogan wins the Royal Rumble. He's already the champion, but goes on to wrestle the Ultimate Warrior for the Intercontinental Championship, because it was technically champion versus champion title for title. So Hogan could have won the IC belt at WrestleMania 6. 91, it's the same thing. Hogan is not the champion. The Warrior is at the Rumble. Sergeant Slaughter wins it. Hogan goes on to WrestleMania 7 to wrestle Sergeant Slaughter for the championship. WrestleMania 8 is for the title. Ric Flair wins, of course. So then 93, they finally put the stipulation of it being a championship match. So from there on, I think every winner, except for, like I said, Vince McMahon, went on to wrestle for the championship. So has that part of the Rumble, because I feel like you can do different things with the Rumble to make it interesting over here, and we're on year, what, 36 or 37, 38, somewhere in that range. To me, that's what makes it more exciting, because, you know, the year that they put Brock in at number one and he just annihilated everybody up until a point, I think that was at 2020. So there are things that they have done to make it feel different, look different. So it's not this repetitive thing, but I do think the one thing that maybe should change, and I don't know how you change it, is that championship stipulation. But then that's the official launch to the road to WrestleMania. So yeah, they lose that kind of branding with it. So I don't know what the solution.
Yeah. I mean, I see where you're coming from. I have no problem in theory with the winner getting the shot at WrestleMania. My problem with it is, again, it eliminates usually 20, 25 people from being a viable contender. You know, if you're playing at home and you're drawing numbers yourself and saying like, oh, okay, whoever wins, you know, if your number wins, then, you know, and you're like, oh, I got Pete Dunne. You're like, oh, well, I'm not going to, you know, no offense to Pete Dunne, but, you know, he's not winning the Rumble this year. Sorry.
You hope he's quickly eliminated, so you at least win some kind of.
Yeah. But so, yeah, you know, and I, especially now that there are two championships, you know, because then it's like, you know, they play, you know, usually play like, oh, which champion are they going to, is the winner going to go after? And, and so that's where you hope that there's a storyline already in place for the winner. And then that elimination chamber, you know, the winner of the elimination chamber normally gets to go to WrestleMania and challenge the other winner. And so, and I think, you know, I don't think this has been the case, but should the elimination chamber then be like the people that were came in second through sixth in the Rumble to be the contender for, you know, would that make sense? Would that be, or would that then hinder the Rumble even more because you want to make sure that those, you know, it's like 2015 when, you know, Big Show and Kane were in the final three. It's like, you know,
I think that's a decent stipulation too. And you could even still, because I know in some years they have had it to where the champion has defended in elimination chamber and then lost it. I think the year that Bray Wyatt won the championship was he won it in the elimination chamber from somebody. I don't even remember who. And then that was the year that Randy Orton won the Royal Rumble. So I don't hate that idea of making your final, what do they put in chamber six?
You know, six,
Your two through seven or whatever it is, are automatically get a bid into the elimination. Yeah. You could do that on the women's side too.
Yeah, and you know, because they had the final four in your house, final four pay-per-view after Austin's first victory, where they put technically the last three people in the Rumble for the shot. So, maybe I'll tweet Trips later on and suggest that. See if I can get blocked.
If you can get blocked. So, okay, we talked about you think Punk, you're going with Punk. I don't know.
Well, I mean, seriously, though, I think, you know, the real obvious winner should be Shane McMahon.
What? Explain. What am I missing? Well,
he's Shane McMahon. He should come in and win. I mean, he got it taken away from him a few years ago. So they need to do good. But, no, I think I would say I'm going with Punk and backup winner being John Cena, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Cena winning it and beating Flair's record. And if Cena does win the Rumble, we'll do a whole in-depth episode on Cena winning and what that means for the championship and all that good stuff too. But and then remind me, who were you thinking on the women's side?
You know, it's such an open field. Like, I don't even know how many women have declared for, which here's a side tangent. Why don't more guys come out, like lower card guys come out and declare for the Rumble? You know, if that's all it takes to get in, like if your goal should be to want the title and also to main event WrestleMania. So why are you just sitting back and catering being like, hopefully Pierce or Aldis will put me in the Rumble. Go out there and, you know, great. Grab that brass ring. But on the women's, on the women's side, I'm going to go, I don't want Charlotte Flair. She's already won. And I'm not a fan of the returning superstar winning the Rumble trope that they have. I will say, I'm trying to think of women. I'm going to go Cora Jade. Let's bring her up from, Cody did it too, and I groaned.
I was waiting for you to look back up at the camera. I'm like, okay. For those I'm holding Cody up for him.
I was trying to think of a woman that, you know, that had a chance. I think either Cora Jade or Roxanne Perez. If they're going to bring them up from NXT, it's a good way to catapult them right into the main event scene.
Could you see a situation, a scenario, and this will be the final thoughts, a scenario where one of these TNA talent win the Royal Rumble or makes it towards the end? You know, I see it more plausible on the women's side than on the men's side. But, you know, Joe Hendry, I think, is going to be an obvious entrant into the Rumble. I'd be shocked if Joe Hendry not in the Rumble. But could Jordynne Grace, or Tessa Blanchard, for that matter, win the Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say that I think Joe Henry should win and then do a title versus title match at Mania. But, I don't know. The rumors are that Jordynne Grace's TNA contract is up. And if so, I would totally expect her to sign with WWE. So I could see her coming in and when, she's been in two Rumbles already. She's done well on both of them. And again, you bring someone in and you want to, if you want to make them an instant star, that's how you do it.
Well said. Very well said. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye for this week's episode?
No, I had something, but I don't remember what it was. So I was going to say, the Royal Rumble kickoff to Mania. I'm curious to see where they go with Mania. I'm still not a fan of two-night shows, although I do think Royal Rumble would probably be the one pay-per-view that I could justify having two nights so that you could have men's Rumble and women's Rumble on separate nights and not kind of suffer from Rumble fatigue.
I
I
think
think
that's
this.
happening next year, isn't it?
I don't know if next year. I know SummerSlam is going two
Two
days,
nights.
two nights. Yeah. But I would also say that we didn't really talk about the rest of the card, which only has two other matches. I mean, we talked Cody and Kevin, but we didn't talk about the 2 out of 3 fall tag team title match, which I believe is the first time they've done that since the first Rumble with the Jumping Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls. If my memory is correct, probably not, but I'm going to say it is. And I think this is another one where you're looking at maybe a 3 hour PLE. I don't, both Rumble matches will probably go around an hour and then your two other matches in between. So I think, I don't really know what my point is here other than I was going to say, this is why SmackDown should not be 3 hours and why Raw should not be 3 hours because your weekly show should not be as long as your PLE or your PLE should not be shorter than your weekly show.
And that's going to
That's
be on
my
Netflix, right?
soapbox.
The Rumble.
No, I think it's still on Peacock.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe here for people in the States, for the rest of the world, yeah, they get
Oh, okay. I wasn't
Netflix.
sure when the Netflix switch will be.
I don't know. But and then I saw that Netflix is raising their price again, so screw you, Netflix.
Of course, of course. Don't become a billionaire company by. Giving
Yeah.
shit away for free.
I know. You don't set records every week for the biggest gate if you're not charging $2,000 for ringside tickets.
That's true. That is true. Well, friends, we're going to charge you just $5 to
Yeah,
enter the 2025 Royal Rumble contest. Again, there are plenty of spots still open. This is a partial fundraiser for the I123Cents Wrestling Figure Drive. So if you want to Venmo, Cash App, or PayPal, everything's on the My123Cents Facebook page. We are going to do the drawing on Thursday. That is the plan right now. We're drawing to pair up everyone's numbers. So hopefully you don't end up with R-Truth, even though we love R-Truth. But the reality of him winning might not be the greatest, but you'll be entertained in the process. But again, it's $5 per entry for the men's and women's. Just designate which Rumble you want to be a part of. We'll wrap things up on that note. Chad, thanks so much for being here this week.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
All righty, friends. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.